Spiritual. Start that again. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Spiritual principle, perseverance. So again, I was told that doing steps 1 to 9 make me into a hollow vessel so that I'm filled with God and not myself. And steps 10 and 11 help to keep me that way. They help me watch for my will versus God's will. And these steps are practiced with an awakened spirit because I've got that connection with a higher power, not with my conscious mind. And I'm not responsible for my first thought, but I am certainly responsible for my second thought and the subsequent action. And this is the focus of step 10. And step 10 takes my emotional and spiritual temperature every day, stopping me from becoming blocked from my higher power. Or if I become blocked, I've got a process to help me to be unblocked. And I'm given a clear set of instructions. So this is just how the big book speaks to me and how I interpret step 10, because I am conscious that there are many, many different views on this. And I'm not saying I'm right and other people are wrong. This is just how step 10 speaks to me. So we find the instructions on page 84, halfway down. And I love how the preceding sentence that Heather read tells us that they will always materialize for us, talking about the promises, if we work for them. And then straight away, it says this thought, what's the thought that we have to work to keep the promises, brings us to step 10, which suggests that we continue, i.e., it's an ongoing process, to take personal inventory, and we continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. And we vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So one of the things I hear in program is that we have to finish our amends before we can start step 10. And I don't think that that is what this sentence is saying at all. It's saying that we start step 10 as soon as we've started step 9. It tells us that we've entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. And then the instructions are really, really simple. And I think, again, having worked with a lot of sponsees, I often see people getting really tied up in the semantics around step 10. And I think it's really, really simple because it just gives us a number of instructions. So it tells us that we have to continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And we're familiar with those things because we've seen them in step 4. So when these crop up, and notice it says when and not if, so it assumes that these things are going to crop up because we're human beings. We're told that we have to do a number of things. So the first instruction we have is we ask God at once to remove them. So when we notice ourselves being selfish, dishonest, resentful, or in fear, the first instruction we have is that we ask God at once to remove them. The second instruction is that we discuss them with someone immediately. The third instruction is we make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. And the fourth instruction is then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our cord. So what that paragraph is saying to me is that I have to continue to take personal inventory and make amends as I go along. And I start to live like this as I am putting my past right, i.e., step 9. I don't wait to complete step 9 before I move into step 10. Because that recognizes that completing my amends may take some time. And I'm now in the world of the spirit because I'm connected to my higher power. I'm not in the world of self, as working the previous steps has freed me from the bondage of self and unblocked me so that I can access a power greater than myself. And I'm going to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And this isn't going to be an overnight issue, it's going to take time. And the word continue tells me that I am going to continue working on my recovery. And it's used 4 times in that one paragraph. And this emphasizes that this is ongoing work. I'm not done. And we're given the 5 instructions that we have to follow. And I was told that all of those things, like the resentments, the fears, the jealousy, the intolerance, the judgment, they're like stones that fill my backpack during the day. And if I don't empty them by doing step 10s, then by the end of the day, that backpack is going to weigh me down. Or another analogy I heard, they're like pebbles that accumulate in my shoe. By the end of the day, if my shoe is full of pebbles, then I won't be walking very comfortably. So step 10s are on the run with God during the day. And again, I hear people use step 10 and 11 interchangeably. My view is that step 10 is done during the day as I'm going through the day. It's kind of on the hoof. It's when I'm carrying out my daily activities and I notice that I'm resentful or I'm envious or I'm fearful. Step 11 is what I do in the evening before I go to bed, and we'll come on to those instructions and what I do when I awaken. And I heard a really lovely thing that really spoke to me. And it's what I've just said, that step 10s are on the run with God during the day, but the step 11 review is when I'm sitting in my higher power's lap, calm and quiet at the end of the day, reviewing my whole day. And I'm rattling the backpack or I'm shaking my shoe to see if there are any stones or any pebbles left. And I just love that because, I do step 10s imperfectly during the day. I might notice a fear, but I'm busy doing something and I don't step 10 it. And when I sit down at night to do my evening review, that's like my safety net because I can sit down and I can think, right, okay, what have I done today? My postmenopause brain means that I usually have to look in my diary to remind myself what I've done because when I sit down every night, I usually can't remember what I've done during the day. But it's an opportunity to sit down in the quiet in the evening with my higher power and just review the day. And if I've forgotten or not had the willingness to do a step 10 during the day, then my evening review is my safety net and I get to pick that up before I go to bed. And that kind of really works for me. And we're all human beings. So, I can't stop the thoughts from coming into my mind, whatever that might be. It could be anything. It could be something as simple as me asking a friend if they've got time to meet for coffee and they haven't got time that day. And I take that personally. So I think, well, she doesn't love me because she's not got time to go for coffee with me. It could be something as kind of simple and ridiculous as that. That's what my mind does. My mind is designed to think just like my heart beats, my lungs breathe, my eyes blink. My mind is designed to think. And that's what it does. And in that function, it's trying to protect me. So I can't control the thoughts that come into my head, but I can turn to God when I'm aware of those thoughts. And, there is no need to judge those thoughts. And, again, I do that imperfectly because I often think, God, I'm a really bad person because I've thought X, Y, and Z about somebody. And if I fight those thoughts, they're going to consume me. So actually having a practice where I can turn to God is incredibly helpful. And it just helps me be aware of what's going on. And it's like my spiritual temperature. And there's the audio links at the back of the document. And there's a particularly brilliant podcast on step 10 called God's Cold Shower. It's one of the Vision for You podcasts. And it is the best description of step 10 that I have ever heard. And it's got some really helpful practical examples in there. But just that one paragraph, because I don't know why we get in a tizzy about step 10, because it's really, really simple. If you break it down like that and just follow those instructions, and there's a variety of ways in which we can do step 10. There's really useful apps that make it very, very easy to do a step 10 because it just asks you all those questions and you just complete it. Some people write it out longhand and take a picture of it and send it to the sponsor. I tend to use a variety of ways. So I've got one of the apps, so I will often just do it quickly on the app and send it off to my sponsor. If I've got an outreach call with somebody, I will often say, can I just talk through a step 10 with you? And I follow that format. Or I'll often leave a voice note for my sponsor, and I just again go through the process. And I so as an example, I would say, I've got a resentment about this. I've asked God to remove my resentment. I'm sharing it with you. I have harmed someone, and this is the amend I'm going to make. Or I haven't harmed anyone. And then I would tell my sponsor what I am going to do next, which is about turning to help somebody. So I would say something like, I've got a sponsee call in half an hour, and that's my next action, and I'm going to turn to be present with my sponsee and get out of self. Or it might be a non-program action. It might be, I'm going to go and start to make dinner. But what I do is just commit my next action, because it's really clear that it says when we've done what we're supposed to do, we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. And the aim of that is to get me out of self, because that is where I kind of reside a lot of the time if I'm not connected to my higher power. And then, of course, we have the really wonderful step 10 promises on the bottom of page 84. Would somebody volunteer to read those for us, please? Eileen, thank you.
Thank you. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. But by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will.
Just read the next paragraph, Eileen, please, as well.
Oh, okay. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action.
Thanks, Eileen. Thank you. So, yeah, I just love those step 10 promises. And again, it's kind of like it's a really good discipline to just reflect on those and where am I against those promises? Is that what my life is feeling like today? And if not, then what's going on? Is the areas of my life that I need to look at? Because they're like really big sweeping promises, aren't they? We've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even our problem foods, even our alcoholic foods. So, have we got food neutrality? Have we got peace around food? Sanity has returned. And if you remember when we were talking about step two, we weren't necessarily talking about kind of us acting insanely. Many of us have kind of been very sensible in lots of areas of our life. We've kind of had families, we've had good jobs, we've had relationships with people. The insanity is the mental twist that causes us to pick up our problem foods when we know what's going to happen. So have we got that neutrality around food? It says we will seldom be interested in excess food. It doesn't say never. So, I would say usually 99% of the time I have neutrality around food, but I can still sometimes get those food thoughts, particularly the mental twist can tell me that this time it's going to be different. I'm 60 years old in a couple of months, and since my kind of teenage years, it's never been different. My experience with food has been my experience with food, but the mental twist can tell me, well, maybe in your 60th year, it might be different sometimes. Why is that going to be when every experience had shown me what it's shown me? But we will seldom be interested in excess food. And if we're tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame, and we react sanely and normally. And this just happens to us as we follow the instructions in the book and work these steps. It just comes. It's a miracle. How else can we describe the transformation that happens to us? When I'm not in recovery, I can't get through a day without excess food. I just can't do it. So that is an absolute miracle that 99% of the time I have neutrality around food. It's just a miracle. There is no other description. And it doesn't feel like I am avoiding temptation, or I'm white knuckling it, or I'm, hanging on. I'm in this position of neutrality, safe and protected, because my higher power has removed the problem. I'm not cocky or afraid, and that is my experience. But there is a big but. That is how we react as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And if I'm not in fit spiritual condition, then I am in trouble. And step 11 and 12, which we'll come on to, our last two steps, are absolutely critical to keeping in fit spiritual condition. And my experience of my 7-year relapse is that is not what I did. I did not maintain fit spiritual condition. I didn't put myself, or I didn't keep myself in a position to be in fit spiritual condition. And I paid very dearly for that. And when I read the step 11 instructions, those were the things that I stopped doing. I stopped working with as many people. I stopped going to as many meetings. So I wasn't in fit spiritual condition. And that caused me significant problems, because I ended up with a 7-year relapse that, I genuinely thought I was never going to come out of. And then the second paragraph that Eileen read, it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. And I'm told that I'm heading for trouble if I do, because we substitute food for alcohol. So food is a subtle foe, but also our emotions are a subtle foe. Because we're not cured, we have a daily reprieve, again, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So the message is being repeated and repeated about how important being in a fit spiritual condition is. And it tells me that every day I have to carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. And, one of our mantras that we have in program is, how can I best serve thee? Your will, not mine, be done. And my reflections on my relapse, why was it easy to let up on my program of action? Well, when I look back, I can really see why that happened, because I started to feel good. I'd not been in the food for a while, so I dropped kind of 4 or 5 stones, and I was starting to get my health back. I was I wasn't in constant pain. My relationships were starting to improve. I was starting to be more productive because I had more energy. And I started to think that I've got this, and I started slipping on my actions. And for me, that is really easy to do. I was just having that conversation with a sponsee I was working with before I came on this workshop. Today it would be really easy to do that, because I'm a healthy body weight, I'm incredibly fit. I got up yesterday morning and ran 10K. This is the woman who avoided going upstairs. I was so out of breath by climbing a flight of stairs. I avoided going upstairs. So it would be really, really easy for me to start to think, do you know what? I've got this. I've only got this because God's got me. And God's got me because I'm working hard on my recovery for today. I might wake up with a completely new set of ideas next week, who knows? But today I'm putting a lot of effort into my recovery. But my brain is a really, really dangerous thing because it can tell me anything and it can say, oh, well, you don't need to do that today. And I don't feel like going to a meeting and I'm supposed to have a catch
Just
up
a
with it.
minute, girls.
I think somebody's unmuted there,
Oh,
Eileen.
sorry.
No problem, no problem at all. I can just start to think I don't need to do that. And that is exactly what my head does. I don't need to tell my sponsor what I'm going to eat tomorrow. I'll be fine. And that is really, really dangerous territory for me because my recovery has to be a daily commitment with daily disciplines. And I do all of that imperfectly. And I'll share some of that with you when I come on to step 11. But if my experience is, if I become spiritually unfit and I move back into self without taking action, then I will end up back in the food. That is my absolute story with relapse. That was my exact experience. If I let up on my spiritual disciplines, then picking up my binge foods is not a decision. It's only a matter of time because I am a real compulsive overeater. And at some point, I lost the power of control when it comes to certain foods. And I am eating to satisfy a craving beyond my control if I am not in recovery. And that is just going to mean one thing. And, I've learned over the years that the size of my body bears absolutely no resemblance to the size of my disease. So just because I'm a healthy body weight does not mean to say that the disease is in any way lessened. And in fact, my experience of relapse when I relapsed on Christmas Day night 2013 after everybody had gone to bed, and that was after, 5 years of great recovery. My experience was that the disease was a whole lot worse than when I first came into program in 2008. I thought I had a problem with food when I came into the rooms in 2008. And I can tell you that, my God, that was a completely different level when I relapsed in 2013. There was nothing subtle about it. It sucked me right back in. I was eating huge volumes of food, and the 12 stone, sorry, I don't know what the conversion is to pounds, but the 12 stone I lost went back on scurrily quickly, absolutely terrifyingly quickly, because the disease had gotten a lot worse. And I dread to think what that would be like if I relapsed again. It was absolutely terrifying. And during those 7 years, knowing that OA was the only thing that had ever worked for me, and knowing that that was the solution, and not being able to connect with that solution, was absolutely soul destroying and terrifying. And I've done quite a few workshops on relapse with another fellow. You can find them on YouTube. I'm not going to go into kind of much detail now because I've done quite a bit of that. But I feel really, really passionate about talking about my relapse because that's not to frighten people who haven't experienced relapse. And as I said at the beginning of the workshop 2 weeks ago, I genuinely don't believe relapse has to be part of everybody's story. I think this book is really, really clear on what we have to do to keep in recovery. So I don't believe that relapse is inevitable. But for me, who stopped following these instructions, it was. And the scary thing was, I could only see that in the rear view mirror. So I started having problems in my recovery around the August time during a trip to New York. I acted out on some behaviors around that time. And then I came back home and everything was absolutely fine for a while. But things had started to unravel, and I couldn't see it because I can only see my relapse in the rear view mirror. I think the analogy I used on week one was, it's like standing on the edge of a cliff in fog and I can't see I'm about to fall off. And that's why, I need to avail myself of really good sponsorship. My recovery is not dependent upon my sponsor, and we'll talk about that when we talk about step 12. But I have to avail myself of good quality sponsorship. So I have to, you know, be in daily contact with my sponsor and to be sharing what's going on to the best of my ability, because I am not always honest with my sponsor on the day. Usually after about 3 days of some sort of behavior, I'll fess up because I feel really bad that I've not shared that with my sponsor. But to the best of my ability in the day, I need to be honest with my sponsor and do the disciplines that work for me. Because without this program, you know, I am absolutely and utterly screwed, and I will be in the food, and I have the capacity and the capability to eat myself to death, because that's what I thought I was going to do in relapse. I genuinely thought that, you know, I was going to die. I truly did. And yet in step three, you know, I hand my will over to God. And by step 10, I'm told that I can exercise my willpower along this line. What line is that? That's God's will. All I wish for, it's the proper use of the will, because I am being directed by God and not Gail. And then the last paragraph that Eileen read, it says, you know, much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from our higher power, who has all knowledge and power. And if we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of God's spirit into us. We've become God conscious. And I love that description of, you know, what does being connected to a higher power means? It means that, you know, I've got this sense of God consciousness. And I guess that manifests differently in each of us. And the way that I describe that is that, you know, the longer I'm in recovery, I feel that God consciousness here in my heart space. Gail consciousness is up here, this kind of thinking brain that tells me all sorts and is only concerned with me and my needs being met. And oh my God, this dreadful thing is going to happen and I'm not going to be okay, and makes up all sorts of stories. But when I can just connect here, and I often do that through breath, then that's that sixth sense that this paragraph is talking about. That's how I describe it. That's how it feels for me. And, you know, the longer I'm in recovery, it doesn't happen instantly, but I'll just become aware of, oh my God, I'm in my own head and I'm thinking this, or I'm kind of, you know, projecting, or, you know, thinking this awful thing is going to happen. And I can just bring myself back. And I have a few little mantras that really work for me. You know, one of the things I might say is, you know, in this moment, all is well. In this moment, I am calm. In this moment, I am safe. And that's sometimes all I need, just to bring me back to the present moment. Because when I'm in my own head, it's usually a disaster zone. It really is. And, you know, it's a wonderful place to be when we get to the end of step 10. But there is so much more to come in step 11 and 12. You know, the miracles of this program just keep coming. So, as I say, please, that is just my own interpretation of step 10. That is how I read this. And don't want to get into debates around whether, you know, step 10's done at the end of the day or whatever. The big book tells me that step 10 is what I do during the day, and that is my own practice that works for me. But, you know, you may have a different practice that works for you, and that's absolutely wonderful. And on that note, again, if we just take maybe 5 minutes, I'll do the time in Mary Ellen. I'd really love you to share your experience of step 10, because I know that there's so many different ways of doing step 10. And I think one of the great things about this workshop is just hearing kind of how you do your step 10s as well. So let's just take 5 minutes to either just think about or jot some bullet points down. And then we'll just have some shares back on that before we take a break. So yeah, just some thoughts on your step 10 experience, practice, whatever you want to share on step 10. Thank you.
Gail, real quick, what were your three mantras in this moment? All is well, I am safe.
Yeah, in this moment, all is well. In this moment, I am safe. In this moment, I am calm.
Thank you.
Or it could be anything, whatever works for you. But for me, it's just that action of putting my hand in my heart space. There's just something happens that just enables me to do that and just brings me to the present moment. Thank
Thank
you.
you.